The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go,
oh! It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
You do like my shirt, don't you?
That shirt is pretty sweet.
That's the best way to start a show.
I thought it was a Jack Daniels shirt at first, and I was like, I've never seen Jack Daniels have this rainbow. Oh, it says UB40.
It does.
Yeah. Since he's been sitting there singing Red Red Wine.
I was singing? Was that out loud? Was that out loud?
What?
Welcome to the Computer Corner. Did you even know it was Computer Corner? You thought you just stepped into the middle of our conversation, which pretty much you did. And luckily for you, that conversation, almost always, when you get three guys that live and breathe and work around technology every day of their lives and have for more than a decade, I think, in every case, for the room today, you're going to invariably get talk about technology and talk about computers and things going on in the world. We were all talking about cool little accessories for iPhones, and that's what you sort of stumbled upon and interrupted. But that's okay, because we're going to have you talk with us about technology here in the Computer Corner, and you can do that in a number of different ways. If you've listened to the show anytime in the last decade or so, you know that we have many ways for you to get involved. First and foremost, we've got resources and information and links for you to give feedback, ask questions, make suggestions, those kinds of things at our website, datadoctors.com/radio. Or for those that are not slash inclined, it's just datadoctors.com. You click where it says radio show and you get to the same place. Again, there you'll see our theme du jour. You'll see resources. You'll see all kinds of stuff there. And in addition, you'll see our phone numbers listed there. You can call in, which is another option, 602-277-5827. Again, the same number it's been there for more than a decade, 277-KTAR. That's another way, and probably a very popular way to get involved. And that being the case, you'd want to dial that number early or commit it to memory. And when you hear someone hang up later on as the show progresses, dial in then, because the lines generally do book up real soon. And we invite you to call in with whatever your issue is, your consternation, your computer frustration, your problem, your, are you already starting to think about the holidays and maybe it's time to replace a PC, or maybe you want to get it fixed up, or maybe you want to get a new phone device or music, MP3 player, who knows what that is. But whatever the question is, we're here for you. We're here to help you out. And specifically, we're here this week to talk a little bit about patches, updates, and service packs. I know it sounds awfully exciting. I know Kevin, when he saw the theme of the show, he went, updates, patches, and service packs. I can't imagine a more exciting topic, a more exciting theme. Right, Kevin?
I haven't sat down yet. Too excited to sit.
You're on, like, on the edge of your chair, actually. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Well, they can't see me. I could be standing.
And by the way, I guess I should introduce who's here today, because as you know, the cast changes now. We've got a set group of players pretty much, but we rotate, as it were. And so across from me is Kevin Church. He's here to help out. He's here probably about every 3 weeks or so to jump in. He's a general manager, district manager. He's a guy that's in charge of some of the stores here in the Phoenix area, and some stores in other areas of the country as well for Data Doctors, our sort of weekday gig. And so he provides a lot of insight as to what's happening actually out there in the field, in the stores, the things that we're seeing, the trends, the kinds of questions we're getting from customers. It's it's a guy with his head right in the middle of the game, so to speak. So he's here to join and help out. And also Louis Georges with Mac Media. He's our friendly Mac guy, our guy when we have questions about that other operating system, you know. Some people call it the dark side, some people call it the light side, depending on your perspective. Lewis is the guy that we call up and say, hey, that whole Mac thing about this, that, and the other. In fact, just before the show started, I was asking him about some weird thing that it turns out he didn't have an answer for, which makes him worthless to me. But
let me clarify something. I mean, I don't know about the friendly thing, but I'm a Mac guy.
Yeah, true that. The friendly thing for sure is...
He had a cooler toy than I have, that extra battery pack for the iPhone that he's got sitting there. His phone doesn't die like...
Well, there is a reason for that.
Yeah.
He's got friends. He's heard of those. Yeah, and then he's talking on the phone a lot because he has friends. And
you know, between the MySpace and the Facebook.
MySpace and Facebook? You're a big MySpacer?
No.
I'm going to have to go find you now.
Hey, speaking of which, I found a social networking website for zombies.
For zombies.
Specifically.
Great. We'll have to
on the Halloween special.
We'll have to definitely make sure we keep that in the back of our minds for a for a segment coming up here shortly in the show, I'm sure.
You know, I'm kind of interested in seeing how many G1 customers are out there right now listening.
Well, most people listening, I don't think, know what a G1 even is.
It's not a rap song.
A Google phone.
A Google phone. The soon-to-be-unveiled partnership between Google and T-Mobile, which seemed like an odd choice. The G1, it's supposed to be the, they say iPhone killer, but really iPhone sort of competitor, because nothing else so far out there really competes at the same kind of level.
Well, it's the same thing with the iPod. Anything that competes with the iPod is an iPod killer.
You know, you're sitting next to the man who owns what he believes is a far superior device to the iPod.
No, it's not the device itself. Ah. It's the software I like better.
The software. The Zune is what he has, and he's basically...
The unit's ugly. It's terrible, but I like the software.
The software.
Well, and see, that's kind of what I thought of the Google phone. A little clunky looking. I don't know if you've seen one yet, but...
I've seen only the pictures. I'm not in person.
One of my employees had one. It looked like a Tonka toy.
Tonka toy. Huh.
Well... that's what I thought by looking at it. I didn't look at it too long, but the interface was so-so, and that's why I was kind of wondering what other people thought of it.
So maybe if you have your input of the G1, if you don't even know what it is, then I guess you'll have to go Google it. And either way.
Google the Google.
Google the Google. What's Google? Oh, no, we're screwed if somebody says that, right? Of course, we're going to try to weave in the updates, patches, service packs. I know a question that we get still a lot. Service Pack 3. If you're running Windows XP, which the majority of you still are, you want to know, is it time for Windows XP Service Pack 3? Is it? It's been a long time. It's been since April since it's been released, and still the majority of people that run Windows XP don't have it installed. I'll be honest, I don't have it installed on my home PC or my work PC. And I don't really know why at this point, other than for the early days, there were some issues and problems. And so the question remains, is it time? And we're going to talk a little bit about that. And, of course, your call is your question, 602-277-5827. It's the Computer Corner. Kevin Church, Louis Georges, Brandon Disney back right after this short break. Welcome back to the Computer Corner.
You put the iPhone down in front of us and said it was going to do something.
Yeah, but then it was time for the show to start, so I had to stop it from doing something. I'll show you what it is in a minute, and you'll think...
Is it too hot for radio?
No, it's just, you know, it doesn't sound so awesome.
That's why it's on your leg ready to mute.
It's you know, the little speaker part. It doesn't take much to cover that little speaker thing on this thing.
No.
So,
but if we hear the F-bomb drop like 100 times...
No, it's nothing like that. I mean, it would be fine. It's just, I don't know, something about me says having random noises in the background while you're trying to do a radio show doesn't sound so hot.
It's probably not real professional.
Yeah, there's that. So anyway, yeah, it's not going to make it sound because I stopped it, and it wasn't really worth the payoff anyway, so... Anyway, it's a Computer Corner, believe it or not, and we're talking about technology, we're talking about... service packs and patches and upgrades, and when is it time and when should you wait and how do you know? You know, you get these little things that pop up and saying, hey, I've got this new update. Do you want to apply it? And when do you say okay? And when do you say, oh, let me think about this? And that's a tough question. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as the show progresses. We'll weave that in. And, of course, if you have questions about that or any other computer issue, technology issue, frustration, you want to just ask if Louis really is a nice guy, whatever. 602-277-5827, that's the number
for you to dial in. And that's the number that Walt dialed. And he's first up here on the Computer Corner. Walt.
Well, hi, gentlemen. I have a question about what kind of system to look as a replacement. Currently have a network with one Windows 2003 server, and I've got three workstations with Windows XP. So it's probably time to do some replacing. And I'm wondering if I should hold off for Windows 7 or get something with the Vista that's now available.
Well, all those, I mean, questions, if you're talking about in a business environment, before you just decide, it's not like, well, do I get an SUV or a hybrid or a bicycle? You got to first figure out, well, what do I need the computer to do, right? What are the applications I run? What are the things that I rely upon? And that helps make your decision for you. Now, if it's pretty standard stuff, I need to run Word and Excel and get email and get online, then that means you have choices and you get to do whatever you'd like to do. But as soon as you start to say, well, I'm running a dental office and I have this particular piece of software, or I run an attorney and I use practice management software, whatever it is that's specific to what you do.
Yeah, anytime you have proprietary applications, you want to be a lot more cautious.
So you got to then go to whoever makes that software, that program, that thing that you use that's not so mainstream, and find out what do they work with and what are the caveats and, you know, that kind of thing.
That's a good point. I do have one DOS application that we use pretty heavily. Had it for years, works great, want to make sure wherever I go, it's going to be DOS compatible. Yeah.
So you're going to have a tough road ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what's your choice, I can tell you that you're gonna, if you haven't already started figuring out how to eventually move away from that application, you need to start doing that, because it's every version of Windows, it gets tougher and tougher to run what now are 20-year-old plus applications. It's only going to get harder for you.
Mm-hmm.
So you might, if you haven't already started looking at alternatives or upgrades to that or different ways to do what you're doing, I can tell you that Windows XP is going to be a lot easier to make a DOS-type program work as far as an environment than Windows Vista or whatever new thing that Microsoft comes up with down the road.
Gotcha.
For the simple fact that it takes a lot to keep everything backwards compatible, and at some point they've got to look at the reality of, you know, less than 1% or 2% of people use this kind of feature. We're just going to stop supporting it.
Gotcha, yeah, and I'm with you on that, and we are looking at what we might do to replace the DOS program that we use heavily.
So that, I mean, to me, I wouldn't go out and start buying Vista machines or waiting for the next thing without addressing that issue first, because I can all but promise you that's going to be an issue in anything you do going forward.
Gotcha. Okay, great. Well, I appreciate that, fellas.
Okay.
All right. Once upon a time, did have you guys retrieve some stuff off a hard drive. You did a great job.
Well, I'm glad we were able to help you out and get you back in business.
You did a good job. Thank you.
So, hey, let me ask you the question. The follow-up to that is, now, did you learn your lesson? Do you back up your stuff and do it regularly?
Yes. In fact, and we do a remote off-site backup, and we then do a hard drive. We take it home every week on the hard drive, and we do daily remote off-site stuff.
Good. So you probably at one point thought that would have been, before your bad experience, you would have thought, gosh, that's just probably a little bit of overkill. But now that you've gone through that, you know that's a requirement for a business, right?
Yeah, we will come to Jesus, so to say.
Yeah. That unfortunately for too many people, they have to learn the hard way. But hopefully, for those of you listening, you learned through Walt that don't wait for the bad thing to happen to cause you to do the good thing. Start backing up now. Hey, thanks for the call, Walt. We appreciate it.
Okay, fellas. Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend.
You know, the bad thing about that is most of us technicians out there have actually lost data.
Yes. most people have. Not just, I mean, it doesn't matter who you are.
Everybody learns the hard way.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. As long as you don't keep falling off the bicycle.
Falling off the bicycle. I'm going to have to think about that. Falling off the, I think there's a metaphor in there somewhere. I'm going to get caffeine, and we're going to figure out what that metaphor is. And when we come back, we've got more of your calls and questions, 602-277-5827. It's the Computer Corner. A lot more show to go, about an hour and a half, so stick around. Welcome back to the Computer Corner. We're talking about updates, patches, and service packs. Of course, we're talking about other things as well. We've got resources posted for you online anytime, all the time, day, night, even when Kevin is sleeping. datadoctors.com/radio. You'll find those things, and you'll find the answer, perhaps, to the, should I install it? Should I wait? The Windows updates thing keeps bothering me, telling me that there's an update, but I keep holding off, and I'm not quite sure why. Maybe we should answer the question that we said we were going to answer at some point, which is the Service Pack 3 came out in April of this year, and when it came out, we advised don't install it because there were some issues specifically with AMD processors and certain configurations, issues with certain pieces of software, just lots of little things. Not much that was going to totally shut you down other than a few things, but things that might cause problems or annoyances. It's been quite a while now. Most of the software manufacturers have had time to now make their corrections, or corrections have been made to the actual service pack. Well, not the service pack, but patches have been released since that make it far less of a problem to install today than when we talked about it. So people then ask, well, what's the big deal? What do I get out of it? Well, a service pack is a roll-up of a lot of patches and things that take care of security threats, so you don't necessarily get anything tangible. What you get is protection, potentially, from threats that exist. So the question remains then, is it time? And I think for most people, the answer is yes. I think you still want to do your homework and make sure that you don't have anything obscure that's on a list of known issues, but today that list is so short and so small that for most people, they could probably pretty safely just install it and not have an issue. Now, if you have pre-existing problems, we see this all the time, people who have a machine that's running really, really, really slow, or it's got an issue where it displays these error messages, but they're able to click past them and sort of get it to work, that's not the time to start upgrading your machine.
Those problems do carry across.
Yeah, people think that somehow they're going to apply an update or an upgrade or a patch, and suddenly, magically, all of the problems that they've had prior to that are going to go away. And generally speaking, they're going to compound your issues. So if you have issues with your machine, problems, it's running really slow, it's got updates, or it's got locks, lockups, it's got blue screens, you've got error messages, and that's not the time to start messing with upgrades. It's time to start figuring out what those things are, or getting someone to figure out those things for you, and then proceed down that upgrade path. I can tell you, as a regular course of service, after we're done servicing machines, part of what we do is install updates at all of our shops around the country, and we regularly install Service Pack 3 on computers we service. And that means that thousands and thousands of computers a month that we touch in our stores get updated, but it's after we've gone through the process of cleaning up the issues that they were brought in for and making sure that they're in good shape before we start applying those patches. So,
you know, even before that, one thing that we do with any time that we update, and we always recommend first, is you need to back up before you do it.
Back up. Ideally, if you can make a image copy, meaning an exact snapshot. So if anything goes wrong, you can go back to exactly the way things were before the update. And I know the update process is supposed to be uninstallable and things, but don't rely on that. It's a nice thing that generally works and works just fine. But make your own backup. Make sure that you're prepared for, if something goes wrong, that it's not going to cause you a major problem. But yeah, as Kevin addressed there, we install it because A, we've got the machine cleaned up. B, we know how to go through the steps properly. We know that when it says you must reboot, that's the time to restart, even though it lets you not. You need to restart when it tells you to. We also have that backup to fall back on if something does go wrong. So certainly it's something that I would recommend you install. It's going to keep you protected from problems and issues, but definitely make a backup first. Right?
Absolutely.
And then going forward, for generally speaking, for regular sort of critical updates and things, for example, Microsoft just released late last week or early this week, I don't remember which, a super critical, you need to install this thing like right now kind of update. When those kinds of things come out, just regular sort of critical updates, I would install those things as they come. With service packs, and treat a service pack like an operating system upgrade, where you're like starting with a new operating system, wait just a little bit before you jump on that bandwagon. When they come out, give them a week or two, make sure that you're not hearing about a lot of issues and things in the media. And if you are, then hold off a little longer, but wait for some other people to go first. Just like, you know, we told you don't go around and buy Vista the day it is released. wait a few weeks. The same thing applies for service packs. Pretend like they're whole new, brand new operating systems and treat them accordingly. But the regular sort of releases and patches and things that come along, I'd say go ahead and install those as they come, again with the caveat that you're making regular backups. We assume that. So that's some sort of general information. Again, if you're looking for some resources, we have those resources posted for you, datadoctors.com/radio. You can check those out. Let's see if we can jump back on the phones and help some people out. Up next, it's Mark on the Computer Corner. Mark?
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
All right. Hey, I have an LCD screen, 27-inch wide ViewSonic. And recently, the screen basically goes black, but I still show power on the green light. I've been reading up on the internet, and I keep seeing two different options, power inverter or a bulb. And I kind of like a little direction before I start investing money.
You're thinking about trying to fix this thing?
Yes.
I could probably save you a lot of time. The amount you're going to probably spend by the time you guess on a few parts and put them in and deal with them, and oops, it's the wrong part, and then I got to deal with trying to get whoever I bought it from to swap it out and all these things. A LCD monitor is really, unless you had some really large size, they're not that expensive. I think you're probably going to end up spending just about as much money and have no warranty and possibly have some issues by running down that other path. So my suggestion, you guys have any other thoughts?
Well, you know, sometimes, too, a lot of things that people don't realize is on LCD monitors, manufacturer warranties are usually longer than, like, 1 year, which you get on most stuff. It's usually 3 years, depending on the manufacturer. And depending on what part's actually gone bad, that manufacturer will usually take care of it if it failed due to normal use. So I would check with the manufacturer first, and then if that wasn't an option. You know, the price of those things have gone down so much that the time that it takes to fix in those parts, I wouldn't do it.
Unless you're over probably 20 inches in size or so.
Well, even like 22-inch monitors are like now at 20, 30 bucks more than the 20-inch, depending on the brand. They're pretty cheap, too.
Did he say 27-inch?
I believe so.
On his?
Yeah, his something was up with the phone, and I think we lost him on that. But
I think you could probably get those in somewhere around $350, $400.
I can tell you either way, as a course of you've got represented in this room two different people that are in business fixing computers and technology. Do you guys even fix monitors and things?
No.
Not really.
Waste of time.
I mean,
an LCD display on a laptop, yeah, but on a external monitor, not typically. Normally, they'll just buy a new display.
Yeah.
I mean, even with an Apple monitor, you know, the price difference between an Apple monitor and, say, a ViewSonic means twice as expensive.
Why don't you compare it to an LG?
Twice as expensive.
For the same monitor. What? Anyway. So I hope that helps you out. If you're looking for specific troubleshooting steps and things, I think you're talking to the wrong guys, because we wouldn't fix them. We don't recommend fixing them. And so we just don't have a lot of knowledge and information down that path, because it doesn't generally make a whole lot of sense economically to do.
But we can help recycle them.
Yes. Either one. Mac Media Stores, Data Doctor Stores. We can make sure that the stuff stays out of landfills and that you don't end up just doing the wrong thing by throwing it in the trash. That's no good for anybody. So, yes, thanks, Lewis. Hey, I got to look at my time. If I take a call, you know what? I think I got time. I can make this happen. Pete's looking at me like, no, you can't.
Let's just go for it.
We can make it happen. Art, you're next up on the Computer Corner. How can we help?
Well, I probably, by today's standards, have what would be considered an antique. I got an old Dell 1.6 gigahertz running Windows 2000. But it gives me no problems. It does everything I need it to do, so I have no reason to upgrade. But what I want to do is, the hard drive's 7 years old now. I'd like to get a new hard drive.
Well, that won't get you on the Antique Roadshow.
Yeah, for sure. But getting a new hard drive is used to be a kind of painful process, but these days, and we've had around for a long time, software that's used for imaging.
Yeah, I heard about it. Is it a Kinos Image and Norton Ghost?
Acronis?
Acronis, yeah.
Uh-huh, or Symantec, Norton, whatever they call it these days, Ghost. We use both. We probably prefer the Acronis software. It's the interface is a little bit easier to use. I think it's a few bucks less as
so
far
as
cost.
It's just a matter of taking a new hard drive and plugging it into the extra port and doing an image and then replacing it?
Yeah, with a couple of caveats. Because your machine is a little aged, as we should say, you're going to be using the technology today you'd buy if you were buying a brand new hard drive. The newest technology is something called SATA, Serial ATA, right?
Okay.
And that stands for something that doesn't really matter other than the plug isn't going to fit.
So mine's IDE or something?
Yeah, IDE, also known as parallel ATA. So you're going to have to make sure you buy a drive that's the same interface, number one. Number two, you probably need to do a little bit of quick research to see what the maximum drive size is that that machine will see.
Okay, I got an 80 gig now.
Yeah, but that
would typically like 120, I believe.
Yeah, the machines of that age, probably about 120 gigabytes without having to do other things that might include something called flashing the BIOS or potentially other things.
Or getting an IDE controller card.
Yeah, so you may have a limitation from a technical standpoint as to what that machine can utilize.
Okay.
So if you go out and buy the latest, greatest, you know, 750-gig drive.
I'm figuring something, even if I get a 60 gig or something, because I'm only using about 5 gigabytes of it.
Okay.
So I don't need it.
You're going to have a really tough time finding a drive that's probably under 160 gig or so.
It goes to a flash drive.
Yeah.
No, you want to replace the drive, right?
Right, because I'm just worried about something. I mean, I haven't had any trouble, but I'm worried about it starting to get old and fail on me someday, and this way I'd have a backup.
You know? Well, do you back up regularly?
Constantly.
Okay, so if it failed, you already have a backup, right?
Well, what I'm talking about is not having to go through the pain of reinstalling everything and setting everything up again.
I gotcha. Yeah, then, I mean, you go out and find a drive that's 80 gig, ideally, if you can, and some of the big box stores and things, they're not going to have any of that kind of stuff because they only are going to carry the bigger stuff, but local shops, I know our shops and probably Lewis, you'd have smaller drives and be able to at least get them if you don't have them in stock. So you might be better off looking a little bit more local.
We would normally have them for some of the older machines. Now, I'm not a PC guru, but do they have software applications that'll let you back up your system so that when you do your backups, you can just restore from those?
Yes, and that's something else we can talk about a little bit when we come back. We got to run to a quick break here, but Art, if you want to keep listening sort of offline, we'll give you some other ideas of things you can do for the long run. But thanks for the call.
All right, thanks a lot.
We got to run to a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk just about what Lewis mentioned, which is what about just doing a whole complete backup, which solves sort of two problems with one thing. So we'll talk about that when we come back right here on the Computer Corner. So somehow we're talking about backup because our last caller, he was asking about, well, you know, my machine's about 7 years old. The machine works well for me, but I have this feeling that it's time to replace the hard drive, which is a good idea. That's the most traumatic thing to lose in your PC. So we walked him through a little bit about going and buying a new drive, and he needed to get some software, and he can make that happen. But Lewis brought up a good point, which is, well, what about just doing that on a regular basis? Not replacing the drive, but taking that snapshot backup, the complete image. In the Mac world, there's a piece of software called Time Machine that does such a thing, correct?
Sure. Yeah. And basically, it just backs up for you. And then if you ever have a failure, hard drive failure, you would do a Time Machine restore, and you can pick the date that you want to restore off of, the date or the time.
Right.
And then it just basically ports the stuff back over to the drive, and you're ready to go. No reinstall of anything.
So we talked about he could go out and get some software for the Windows world called like Acronis or Norton Ghost, and he could go get a hard drive and he could do a one-time thing. But with those same components, if you made that hard drive an external hard drive, you basically got yourself the same thing. We actually, a couple of years ago, kind of recognized that there's the software part, then there's the hardware part, then there's the setup and install and get it working part, and then there's the sort of ongoing check part, and we said, God, there's a lot of pieces here.
Well, if you look at it, which process takes the longest? It's the installation of the applications.
Yeah, and getting everything set up and getting it set up properly.
Yeah, and your preferences and all that.
And there's just a lot of pieces to that. And in the Windows world, there's not... Nobody's done a real good job of creating something that, like in the Mac world, that's just plug it in and go. So we created something called the Data Vault, which is software, hardware, it's everything all together, including the service where we install it and set it up for you and show you how to use it. And so you need something like that, maybe. And you can either... For do-it-yourselfers, you can buy all the components and you can create the exact same thing we created. And for those that just want some help, then you can find a solution like that out there. And that might be another thing to do as far as a better way to back up. Don't just take the important stuff, which is good that you're at least doing that. Get a snapshot backup. And you can make that happen on a scheduled basis. So nightly, it's refreshing itself. And then you can go back to exactly the way it was just before the big crash. So not a bad idea. He could do it with his old drive, I guess, too. Or his new drive, or whatever. Check that out. Art, I think that was his name, right?
Art. Yes.
Yeah, see? I remembered. Which is rare for me.
It's not bad.
We've got about a minute and a half, so I'm trying to figure out what to do. And I think taking a call is going to be a problem. So Walt and Judith and John, you folks sit tight. We're going to make sure we talk to you. In fact, we're going to talk to you very, very soon because we want to find out. We've got a couple people. Judith's got something that's really interesting. It says hard drive shredding. I don't know what that means, but we're going to find out what that means. And we've got room for you at 602-277-5827. Of course, we've got resources posted for you online at datadoctors.com. You click on the radio show section, and you'll see the resources for updates, patches, and service packs. You have Service Pack 3 installed on your machine, Kevin, that one you're working on right now?
Yep.
And it's still running?
Yep. That's the
actually, I've been staring at this yellow shield down at the bottom because I'll use this for the internet, but I really won't do much else on it, and I just haven't applied it yet, and it's been sitting there downloaded. I just, you know, a little gun shy.
Really?
I'm always working on it, and I don't want to, like...
You don't want to take the time. Is that what it
is? Yeah, it's a laptop, so I only open it when I really need to use it, and I don't have the time to restart it and back up all my stuff and make sure it's okay, so I just say screw it.
But I'll use it for the internet, you said. So what if you lost everything?
Sure. Well, you know what? There's nothing on here other than my internet connection.
So let's install right now.
All right.
You think we can do it during the break? Let's do it.
We'll try it.
It'll be exciting for someone. No, it won't.
It'll be exciting for you. You got really animated at
that. I don't know.
I just clicked restart now.
Did you tell it to install, though?
Oh, it's been downloaded, ready to install.
All right.
So I just
Now we'll find out when we come back what happened when we put Service Pack 3 on a laptop. Did it go good or bad? If you're one that's waiting to
if
put
I,
it on.
If I can't browse my stuff when I get back.
My fault.
My election stuff.
My fault.
I'll stab you in the eye with an Obama pin.
The perfect storm.
You know what we can talk about when we come back? Besides our Geek Speak of the Week and your calls and questions, which are, of course, top of the list. We can talk about resources to finalize your thoughts before you go out and vote, because we know that everybody listening, everybody within earshot, is for sure going to be out there voting. So we're going to make sure that you can get yourself prepared digitally before you go do so. It's the Computer Corner. Stick around. We got lots more.
The thing I'm having is I just bought a stupid wireless mouse.
But can I do that with Wi-Fi?
Now my screensaver doesn't work.
And that's the solution I'm looking for.
Yep, that would be it.
Something that they call drive-by download.
Okay, stop there.
Try to boot into something called safe mode.
Take my advice and go get this free program that is out of this world.
Eliminate those and see if the problem still persists.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay, I didn't think about that.
Does your computer bite?
There's nothing that comes in the computer that's of any value.
Has your hard drive gone floppy?
The head whack is the thing that makes you kind of go, go!
It's time to call the Computer Corner.
We're not your daddy's computer radio show.
Is this thing on?
On News Talk 92.3. KTAR.
Welcome to hour number two. You heard right. It's the second hour of the Computer Corner. You thought, man, those guys, they're going to be gone soon. No, we got a full another hour to help you out with your computer frustrations, your technology troubles, your, well, whatever. We'll basically help you out. 602-277-5827. That's the number you'll dial. But wait, don't dial now. All those lines are full, so you'll wait for someone to hang up. And then immediately preceding the hang-up, you'll dial that number, 602-277-KTAR. Of course, you can also join us online at datadoctors.com/radio. And you can ask a question, make a suggestion, give us feedback, participate in the blog, all those things over on the right-hand side where it says feedback. So check those things out as well. And as promised, we'll jump right back in to phone calls, right?
Right.
The hard drive shredding. I was intrigued by it.
It's not like shredding on a guitar, is it?
I don't know. We're going to have to find out from Judith about what her shredding is. Judith, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Thank you. The city of Tempe is having a shredding day in a couple of weeks, and I'm taking a bunch of paper over there, but they also said that they can shred hard drives. Do you know anything about that?
Yes. I don't know specifically about the city of Tempe and their shredding of drives, but I know that there are machines... Mm-hmm. that are for destruction mm-hmm. of data. And when you have a hard drive, there's a unique challenge in that hard drives are made out of metal.
Right.
And they store data electronically through magnetics. And it's very difficult for the average Joe user to be able to wipe a hard drive in such a way that if then later donated, that drive cannot be utilized.
Right.
Or at least it seems that it's difficult. There is some software out there that's free software that allows you to do what is a government-level sort of destruction of data without damaging the drive.
So while
we don't care about damaging the drive,
right? But here's a couple of things to think about. If you definitely want to make sure that your data does not fall into the wrong hands.
Correct.
We're all on that same page.
Right.
But when you take it and have it shredded, it for sure will never fall in the wrong hands. And I suppose there is now metal that may be recycled.
Mm-hmm.
But we've lost a lot of value in that drive that could be utilized by an organization like the organization we work with, that we take in used electronics that people no longer want to have around.
Right.
And we get that into the hands of people that do one or two things. They sort it into two bins. Bin one is, here's good usable stuff that we can turn into usable technology to then put into the hands of people who couldn't otherwise afford usable technology. And the other bin is, that stuff we can't really use, doesn't make sense to use, we're going to go ahead and keep it out of landfills and recycle it properly.
Mm-hmm.
And hard drives are one of the things that, generally speaking, can be reutilized. And so by destroying that drive and shredding it, you've eliminated that possibility. It's still certainly better. It takes care of the issue of, I don't want anybody else to get to my data.
Right.
And it's not putting it in the landfill. But we've lost that ability for someone to recapture its value.
Oh.
And so, you know, for me, I would rather take the time to go get a free program you can find online. If you do a quick Google search for something called Eraser.
E-R.
E-R-A-S-E-R.
Uh-huh.
And when you do that search, type eraser.exe, dot being a period.
Uh-huh.
That's the name of the program. It's absolutely free.
Uh-huh.
It does, by default, if you get it, you can take any data that you care about. So let's say all the stuff you cared about that you didn't want to fall into somebody else's hands, that, of course, you already had backed up, was in your My Documents folder. You would simply right-click on your My Documents folder, and a new option would be there once Eraser was installed that said Erase. And its default option is to not only erase the data, but then overwrite and re-erase that data 7 times.
Oh.
Which is what the Department of Defense considers absolutely gone.
Okay.
And so what that does is, it's non-destructive from a physical sense. The drive is still usable, but the data is not.
Okay.
There are also other methods and technologies available to do data destruction more in bulk that doesn't damage the drive, but those aren't really consumer-grade kind of things that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a piece of software that, if you have a little bit more technical knowledge, you can run that allows you to create sort of a boot disk, if you will, and you boot up to this CD that then wipes out the entire drive as another option. Again, it takes a little bit more technical skill and knowledge, but for those that want to spend the time, at the end of the day, if you really don't have the ability from a technical standpoint to do those things, you don't have anybody that can help, then I think the hard drive shredding is a good option.
Okay.
But if you don't mind taking the time or finding somebody who can help, or you don't, you know, if you can do those things, then it certainly makes more sense to me to get that into somebody's hands that can use it.
Yeah.
Just making sure your stuff is gone.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Those things that actually do the shredding, they're really cool, though. Have you guys seen, you guys ever watch, like, Discovery Channel?
Only when I want to learn stuff.
Well, one of the
so you never watch
one of the companies that I work with, a printer company, they actually do their own recycling. It's
right.
A Rico Corp, and they've got these giant shredders, and they have video of it that they'll give you, you know, to show your clients if they want to see what's done with the printers after they're recycled and turned in, because they have a recycling program. You trade in your old printer,
right.
They're going to shred it, and then they're going to discount you on a new printer.
Right. But that Discovery Channel, I saw a show once on there. I think it was like a Dirty Jobs kind of thing. And they were taking, like, everything you can think of. Cars. This shredder was large enough to fit entire cars. And it would take them, and what would come out the other side of the shredder was these little chunks of things. And then they had a process where they would send those chunks of things through various screens to get them separated into different sizes. And then using magnetics, they would separate all the metal parts out from, like, the foam and things. And by the time this thing was done, they had one pile of scrap metal in little tiny pieces, another pile of, like, plastics that could be melted down and reformed into things, another pile. I mean, it was amazing, the process. And it all started with dumping an entire car into a shredder. And it was just really amazing to watch. So now, on a much smaller scale, it's a hard drive.
So what you're saying is we need to get one of these machines.
They do look really cool. I don't know how we justify getting it, but the one that fits a car would really be awesome.
We could shred anything, so.
Yeah, and they also were shredding mattresses, and they would take the springs, and I mean, it was just cool, the whole process, and I don't know why that was cool to me. We got to start a recycling business where we do this so that we could have a reason to have these cool machines.
Exactly.
What do you think, Lewis?
Exactly. We're helping the environment. We're we're having fun because it's just ridiculous and nerdy.
Yeah, after the show, we're gonna go get one of these big shredders.
I'm looking them up right now online.
Awesome. Good idea. Kevin's looking at us like, what are you guys thinking?
Awesome. Good for you guys.
He just sits there and shakes his head the entire time.
That's what he does. That's all Kevin does. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to get caffeinated because we need to do that. Because the machine up here was broken. We had to go downstairs, which was a whole thing. So we're going to do that. When we come back, we got more of your calls and questions. And coming up, our Geek Speak of the Week, Head Whack of the Week, and I'm sure some kind of Mac tip we'll get out of Lewis or so. So stick around. It's the Computer Corner. Happy 20th birthday.
Whose birthday?
A little worm on the internet.
Oh, that thing.
Yeah, that thing. There was a it's the 20th anniversary of The Worm.
After 10 years of being on the radio, how is that thing not dead?
That's not that thing. It's worms in general. Worm is a phrase. So viruses. The first computer virus started, who knows when, but a long time ago, right?
No, we have viri.
Viri. That's many of them. But worms is a whole other category of malware, and the first computer worm is 20 years old today. So worms in general, 20 years old.
Wow.
It doesn't seem like, I mean, it seems like, I don't know. It seems like it's been less time, but time flies when you're having fun as a worm.
Sure.
You know, and worms and apples go together typically, but they don't seem to come together.
Not yet, they haven't.
I think there's been some issues. I don't know if they're worm issues, but, you know, I don't know. Don't you think?
Yeah. I actually like his analogy. It was pretty good. I'm going to stand by that.
Worms and apples?
Yeah.
You ready to have worms and apples? Do you like worms in your apples?
No.
Lewis does.
Pumpkin pie.
Back to the phones?
Sure.
This next caller might be a caller we had earlier in the show, and I think he's calling back. Is it the same Walt?
No, different Walt.
Different Walt, same day.
Yeah.
Same problem.
Hey, I have an uncle named Walt.
Oh, you lucky guy.
Actually, it's a great uncle, but anyway.
Well, I'm a great uncle, too.
Awesome.
A lot of great people around.
I think you missed the reference. Go ahead, Walt.
Well, you were talking about recycling computers and stuff, and I've been working on some computers that have been donated to a thrift organization, and if they have valid XP on them, I try and update them, and I've never had a trouble with SP3 on a Intel processor. My question is the AMD processors. I've never had tried an AMD processor updating, and my own computers have AMD processors on them. One's an HP, and I know they had trouble, and I just wonder what your experience has been with putting SP3 on AMD machines.
Well, when Service Pack 3 first was released, there were some issues with AMD specifically.
Yeah.
Those issues have all been addressed at this point.
Yeah, but you had to download something to address it, right?
Correct. But those have been other patches and things that should have been applied by now.
Okay.
So certainly before you install Service Pack 3, if you go through the Windows Update process, if there's
HP
anything that...
HP had a download and Microsoft had a download, and you know, and they were different sizes, so they were obviously different download packages.
But yeah, if you just... this is one of those things where if you let the software do its job, it's going to, in general, take good care of you here. So if you went to the Windows Update site, it wouldn't put the Service Pack 3 in front of you until you had those other updates installed. It has the ability to detect them.
Well, that's not true because it's downloading there and waiting for it.
And so
they tell you if you have a problem, then you know, try and put this update. But that's after you've blown your system up. So I didn't know what the difference between the HP download and the Microsoft download to deal with AMD processors.
I don't know about the HP download specifically. I would say probably go check with HP either at their site, and they have a pretty decent support site that can help with that, or check with them specifically. But if you're concerned about something like that, obviously, like we said before, a good backup is your best defense, and a little bit of research.
Let me ask you about imaging a laptop drive. Did you have to use the Data Vault to do that?
You need some kind of product to do it, whether the Data Vault is just our kind of easy answer to it.
Hooking another drive into image, right?
Absolutely. Externally, you can hook. When we do an image in our stores, we do it by hooking up something external to the machine, whether it's a laptop or not.
Would that be through a USB port?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, normally it's like
a... Do it through a USB.
Yeah, sure, with the hard drive enclosure. Just plug the drive in and you're good to go.
Now, in dinking around updating these computers, I came across something that almost seems obvious, but I had never seen it before, and that's you shouldn't be running normally as an administrator.
The sort of what they call best practices, and this is for any operating system, and Macs are included, you should never run as the administrative user. You should be running as something with less permissions. It's more of a...
Well, they claim that it prevented Trojans from being...
Yeah, well, I don't know if it necessarily prevents that, but it stops you from doing things that are pretty serious things. And both operating systems, both Macs and Windows, and most every operating system out there, has a way to run a program as if you were administrator on a selective basis, so that you don't have to worry about accidentally doing something. It's very purposeful that way. So that's just a best practice in general. I can tell you a lot of people don't do that, but it's recommended. So you can give that some thought. And definitely research before you install those service packs and updates, like Walt has done. And in his case, he just needs to check with the manufacturer and find out for sure, and or make a good backup and pull the trigger. It's as easy as that. When we come back, it's our Geek Speak of the Week, our Head Whack of the Week, and more. Stick around. It's the final half hour. It's like the final countdown. Remember that song? I'm all by myself over here.
You going to keep going with that?
Yeah, no, not really. Final half an hour of the Computer Corner. If you're just joining us, we've got resources posted for you. We're talking about updates, patches, and service packs. When's the right time? When do you wait? How do you decide? What you do before you do your updates, services, service packs, and patches? Patches? We don't need no stinking patches. We've got the resources. datadoctors.com/radio. You're laughing on the inside. I know you are.
I'm sneezing.
It's time.
Definitely laughing at you.
Yeah, now it's time for something. Something called our Geek Speak of the Week. That's what that music signifies. Each and every week, we bring you a piece of terminology, a word, a phrase, an acronym, something out of the, not the language of Webster, or English, out of the language of geek to help you understand, you know, something that's going on with technology. And this week's Geek Speak of the Week is?
Mouselexia.
Mouselexia?
Yeah. It's the inability to use your mouse correctly.
The inability to use your mouse correctly.
Such as mouselexic?
Are you serious? This is what he gave us?
This is what we got.
The
but
inability?
You know, Stop.
We've all had that mouse that's like a wireless mouse that the batteries are getting low and you try to move it one way and it just jumps somewhere. So
now,
is that it?
There's deeper than that.
No, what are we talking about?
You're talking about the mouse that's with the ball on the bottom. It's all gummed up.
Well, that is a mouse. But the point is let's say somebody, a tech guy at your work, who's pretty judgmental as it is because he knows everything there is about computers and that's what he does.
Right. Move.
He's hanging out over your shoulder. Right. Hey, click that button.
You're talking about Clay, right?
Sure. Click that button.
Click that button.
And it takes you 5 minutes to figure out because of the intimidation factor.
Oh, you're talking about me. I see.
Well, yeah, that could be it.
Yeah. And so you're mouselexic, apparently, because of that?
Apparently.
What?
Apparently.
Not only did I not like this week's Geek Speak of the Week, I don't believe the hype.
Yeah.
But that is this week's Geek Speak of the Week. Folks, if you want to help yourselves, help us, you know that that feedback button at datadoctors.com/radio where it says general comments or ask a question or give feedback? You're welcome to suggest not only themes for shows and Geek Speaks of the Weeks and such. I mean, whatever you think would be awesome to learn about, if we think that it would apply to more than three people, there's an excellent chance we'll make it a show topic and or a Geek Speak of the Week and or something. So you feel free. And you know that the the weekly newspaper column that's syndicated, that's been running a long, long time, that you can see at our free help section of our website. You know that those questions are actual questions that we get most often from the inbox of people mailing stuff off of this here radio show. So keep those questions coming, because that's how we figure out what to talk about and write about in newspaper columns and Ken's CNN pieces and in this show in general. So by all means, give us your feedback, or else you're going to get more stuff like Mouselexia, which doesn't work for me at all.
Well, that's because you've never had it.
Apparently.
You can't identify with the average listener.
Right. I can't identify with you average people?
Yeah, you average. You're too elite.
What about this week's head whack of the week? Lewis?
The head whack of the week?
Yeah, did you even bother to look at that? I didn't warn you, so now you're feeling... Are you feeling nervous? Like, I'm caught off guard and I don't know what this is?
Head whack of the week. My quick launch icons are too small.
So quick launch, for those keeping score at home, some people have this turned on in their machine, down by your start button at the lower left-hand corner there. Next to that might be a set of a couple of icons that are quick ways to launch programs.
So does this have to do with having 40 or 50 of those?
No. So most people are very familiar with the ones that are over by the clock, right? Those are all the programs that are running right now. But the ones we're talking about are buttons over by the start button, which are kind of shortcuts to the most frequently used programs that you might have.
I see.
And this is something that can be turned on and turned off, so some people will have it on their machine and some people won't. I have it on my work machine. There's four or five things that I use all the time, and so I have them in that little click launch bar.
So this is equivalent to, say, the dock in Mac.
The dock in Mac. In fact, that's exactly where Microsoft stole it from, or where Mac stole it from. Somebody stole it from somebody.
Well, people, they like to borrow from each other.
Right. It's borrowing, and that's good. Anyway, those little icons for some people are way too small.
Isn't the great one steal, right?
Yeah, the great one steal. So this week's Head Whack of the Week deals with why are those things so small and what can I do about it. If you want to see this week's Head Whack of the Week, because the steps are a little bit involved, they involve clicking and right-clicking and choosing options and things, you can subscribe to our newsletter, datadoctors.com. Look for the box to put in your email address, hit subscribe, and when you do so, you can also see this week's, as well as the previous 19 weeks' newsletters, all there for your perusal. And the step-by-step instructions are thereby heretofore attached. Did I freak you out?
A little bit.
Thereby heretofore? Yeah. Heretofore, is that one word? I think it is. I think lawyers made that up. I don't know. Back to the phones?
Yeah, there's five lines there.
Jack has a very important question that I think... People listening, we sort of take for granted sometimes when we tell everybody you should be backing up. And Jack's question is, what, Jack?
Is how do you do a backup and how often should you do it?
So those are both excellent questions, the how and the how often. Let's take the easier one first. The how often really is an individual question. And what you have to ask yourself is, what is it, how much information, and that's a function of time generally, is acceptable for me to lose? So if every hour that I do work on my computer, if that amount of work I don't want to have to replicate, then your answer is, I need something that does continuous backup. Versus, that's maybe a trade-off between that is, I need a daily backup, because if I lost what I've been working on today, it wouldn't be the end of the world, but certainly if I lost stuff that was from a few days ago and beyond, that would be a big deal. For some people, it's once a month is fine, because I go out and take pictures with my digital camera, and every couple of weeks, I suck those off my digital camera onto my PC. So I don't do a ton of regular updating of things. So it's a very individual question.
I don't agree.
You don't agree? Everybody should be backing up every second of every day?
I think you should be backing up
every day. One size fits all? We should have a government mandate that says...
Well, you don't have an application that that looks at your calendar on your computer to go, when is he going on this important trip? Is he going to take pictures?
Right.
So why not just back up every day?
Certainly that's the best answer, is back up as often as possible, but that may not always be practical depending on your situation. The best example I use, my wife, she goes once every couple of weeks and downloads a couple of songs off of iTunes, and maybe once a month plugs in the digital camera to pull pictures off of the latest pictures from the kids. And other than that, she's not doing a whole lot with her computer. She checks her email, she goes online, all those things. But she's using email that's web-based, so there's no backing up to occur there. She doesn't really keep bookmarks. She only has a couple of sites she cares about. For her, if I was backing up every day, that would be a a pretty big waste of time and space. Now, it so happens that we have a device in our household that does backup every day. I already had it in the house for other purposes, so adding her to it was not a big deal. But if I didn't have that, I probably would set something up to do like a monthly kind of quick backup of the important things, and I'd move on. So, but if the one size fits all, overall, the best thing you could do is absolutely backup as often as possible. And certainly, the most important thing is keep it simple. If it takes a lot of effort from you, if you have to remember something, if you have to do something, chances are you'll forget, you won't get around to it, it won't be convenient, and that's where people fail usually. And so the how do you backup question, which was the first part of your question there, Jack, that's going to depend a lot on how often. Because if you're doing it daily, you're probably going to have some kind of external hard drive device or a second hard drive, and it's going to be doing a snapshot backup like we talked about earlier. Versus if you're going to backup very occasionally, you might backup to a DVD, which means the how is going to be significantly different. Or you might backup to one of those thumb drives that you plug in. Or you might use an online backup solution, which is a whole other option that's sort of a set it and forget it, right? And most of the online backup solutions these days are now continuous backup, meaning as the files change throughout the day, it's watching and it's backing them up at that change point. Plus, it keeps previous versions usually back for some period of time. So you have multiple versions. I just made an update to this file, and I don't want to go back all the way to my last backup. I just want to go to this revision of it, that kind of thing. Does that make sense? So I know we didn't directly answer your question, but it takes you identifying what's critical to you and how often do you need it backed up, and that's going to help determine what the backup mechanism is, which will be the how.
Okay.
And plus, Brandon likes to talk around the subject.
Well, there's that. So let's take this into some practical application for a second, Jack. What do you use your computer for in general?
Well, I have QuickBooks on it for my business.
Okay.
And then the I have my daughter just uses it for schoolwork.
So, the QuickBooks is a fairly obvious. Beyond the QuickBooks, if you lost everything else, how traumatic would that be to your life?
No, I've just got some pictures on there. Wouldn't be that critical.
Okay, so if it's just the QuickBooks data, as an example, every time you exit QuickBooks, it prompts you to back up.
Yes.
And it gives you a couple of options. Now, what a lot of people do is it will default to backing up to the same folder where QuickBooks is installed, which is great if you have a problem with the file and you need to restore to a previous version, but doesn't help you at all if your hard drive fails. And so a better strategy might be to save that backup instead of to the place it wants you to save it, the local hard drive, to some form of external hard drive or to a thumb drive or to something else that's separate from the machine.
Like a CD.
A CD is okay. It's I'm not a big fan of doing CD-based backups. CDs and DVDs should be thought of more for archival purposes, meaning storage, where you're going to get rid of its original copy, and you probably don't need it, but you may need it down the road.
It'd be a volatile type of media.
Kind of like the old-fashioned filing cabinet. You know, if you're going to print it out and stick it in there, well, rather than do that, stick it on a CD or a DVD. But okay. I don't think it's a very good choice for backing up on a regular basis. There's a lot of reasons why, but suffice it to say, I don't think it's a good choice. The other thing is that a lot of programs like Microsoft Money and Quicken and QuickBooks and all these things, a lot of them have started to partner up with online backup companies to just back up that particular kind of thing, and they usually have really low-cost options for that. And that takes it not only and gets you a backup copy, but it takes it off-site, which is another key critical thing, so that if there's, you know, in our part of the world, we don't have to worry about floods and things like with Hurricane World, right? But we do have to worry about theft. We do have to worry about fires. We do have to worry about other things that may otherwise take your backed up data, and it would have a problem with not only the original but the backup copy. As soon as you do an online backup option, it's off site. You don't have to worry about any of that either.
Okay.
So for you in your particular circumstance, you just need something that lets you back up that QuickBooks file or Quicken file, excuse me. And there's a couple of options we laid out there for you that will take care of your issue, and I would do it every time you save or close the program like it prompts you to.
Right. Yeah, that'd be a good idea.
Obviously, anytime you're going to make a major upgrade to the software, install a patch for it, whatever, they always recommend you make a backup before you do it, and that's a great idea. If you're going to do any kind of like year-end posting or closing, absolutely make a backup before you do that, and make it a special one that is separate from your regular backup, that kind of thing.
Okay.
Thanks great. For the call, Jack.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Have a great weekend. I hung up on us and not on Jack.
Yeah, you did hang up on
me. That's the problem. That's what rookies do.
Good job.
We're going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back, we got a a little bit of time for a few more calls and questions, and we'll wrap up on the updates, patches, and service packs, which is the theme of this week's show. You can find topics, information, links, resources, all available at datadoctors.com/radio. And we'll be back in just a sec. Stick around. Welcome back to the final segment of the Computer Corner. If you missed any part of the show, it's all right. We got your back. Datadoctors.com/radio at least got your back. There you'll find all the resources for updates, patches, and service packs, the questions and the answers, the you know, when's it time, when do I know, what do I do first, what are the resources to check, and how do I do the patching, and all those things. We've got all that stuff there for you, and it will live for a long, 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 long time because it's online, and you know, you also see a link to previous shows where you can go back way back in time and see and hear the audio archives of previous shows in the past and in the present and not yet in the future. We don't let the shows show up more than about a day or so before the shows take place, so you don't get to see the future a whole lot. Just kind of that way. Why are you shaking your head yes and no at me? It's weird. Should we jump back on the phone, see if we can help a few people out before we finish up, wrap it up, and call it quits?
Let's do a few more.
All right. John has questions about child monitoring software. John, welcome to the Computer Corner.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely. How can we help?
Just exactly as you said, I have a 5 and a 6-year-old, two girls who are very, you know, they're very computer capable and love playing online with some of the kids' games.
Yeah, I've got a 5 and 6-year-old, and it's amazing to watch them. They pick up stuff. I mean, they know how to use the mouse. They can figure out how to start the programs they want. They are, and I'm sure they're probably into the same kinds of things with the webkins and all that kind of stuff online, right?
Oh yeah.
So you're trying to figure out what do you do to make sure that they, I mean, at this age they're not going to go looking for the bad stuff, but they might actually accidentally wander into it.
My older daughter likes to Google for horse games. And, you know, and we've done the advanced preferences where, you know, and also with YouTube for filtering content that's not appropriate.
Sure.
I know at the corporate level, a lot of companies use things like Surf Control, and even WatchGuard is coming into implementing that type of software. But at a consumer level, what would be a good recommended monitoring or filtering?
Yeah, at the age you've got, you probably don't care much about monitoring what they're doing. You just care about preventing them from accidentally stumbling into it in the first place. So,
yeah,
so
my filtering kind of falls into the monitoring. I've tried the parental controls on XP, which doesn't do a whole lot of good.
Yeah, it's kind of a joke, to be real honest. I mean, it's a nice try, but I think it was like companies that today are trying to jump on the green bandwagon to say that they're green, but they're not actually. It's sort of pseudo. Let you feel good, but it's not going to do anything.
Right.
There's a piece of software we kind of like out there. It's free. It's called K9 Web Protection. And funny enough, if you go to K9, the letter K, the number 9, webprotection.com, all one word, no spaces, dashes, exclamation points, anything like that, you'll find the software. It is definitely in the preventative side. It's not really monitoring software, so it's probably not the best choice if you want to just monitor what people are doing. Which there's other suggestions for that, but in your case, you just want to prevent them from stumbling into the wrong places. And that's the stuff that I would recommend. It's easy to set up. It's easy to tag the kinds of things that you feel are right for your family and your kids and the kinds of things that are not. And it also allows you to, when the kids are in bed and you're trying to do something and it's starting to stop you, it lets you pop up and has a place for you to put in just a password to bypass so that you can surf a little more freely without having to go in and reconfigure things all the time.
Yeah, well, I'm a network administrator, and, you know, the kids are fortunate, as I'm sure as yours are. You know, we have one set up specifically for them. I have
Perfect. My
PC that's work-related that they don't use, and, you know, I'm looking for something, as you say, that's mostly filtering, not necessarily monitoring, but, you know, things that are not really dumb, but, you know, smart enough to understand Google searches.
Yep.
I know some of them are very granular to where...
Yeah, this thing will take care of you, and when they get into instant messaging and those kinds of things, it should cover you there, too. So K9WebProtection.com, that's what you want to go look for. It should be fairly straightforward, easy to understand, especially for a guy who administers networks on a daily basis. If you missed any part of the show, again, datadoctors.com/radio. Kevin, thanks. Lois, You as well.
Thank you.
You want to remind them where they find you during the week?
MacMediaInc.com.
And until next time, if you don't need it, don't install.